Field in Jacksonville, this is Jaguars.com.
Live.
A weekly look inside the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Jaguars.com Live starts right now.
A look at the U.S. Assured Club improvements. The point of no return. Concrete is officially missing. That means come hell or high water, there'll be new clubs.
Do you know, by the way, how many
coming season? Welcome into Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, Brian Sexton.
I have to get this Cliff Clavin fact.
Go for it, please, Cliff.
Do you know how many tons of concrete they're removing?
A lot.
3,800 tons. That's 7.6 million pounds of concrete.
That's quick math on your part, too.
Well, I got this the other day. I had a couple of days to review it, but that's a lot of concrete.
That is a lot of concrete, and the process is underway. Here's what's up today. It's our free agency preview. If you might have heard, it's the tampering period, the legal tampering period, as they're calling it. Julius Thomas will join us over the phone and discuss the process last year, of course, after a season with the Jaguars. Now we'll look back on that. And Andrew Brandt from ESPN and Monday Morning Quarterback, NFL business analyst, former vice president in the league, a former player agent as well, will join us, and plenty to get to today. Free agency, have you been tampered with yet, John?
I always feel tampered with.
Stay out of the home life, huh?
Right. That's sort of a always feeling for me.
It's an interesting time of year, though, right? Because there's all these names flying around on Twitter and on message boards, and analysts coming up with, we've got sources that say that deals are close. It's a constant, especially in these 48 hours here.
Well, and I don't know exactly, you know, you're hearing different things now. You're hearing Jason LaConfora, who has reported that Malik Jackson is close with the Jaguars. You're hearing Bruce Irvin. You're hearing Olivier Vernon. Will all of them pan out? I don't know. But there's no question that the approach that Dave Caldwell has taken and the team is taking is, let's improve the talent base on defense. I don't know where all the sacks are going to come from. I don't know who's going to have a big year. But let's get better, and let's be able to do it in waves, and let's get back to the point where we are on a level playing field talent-wise with our opponents. And it seems to be that even if they miss on one, they get a good chance on hitting enough that it's going to be a better talented or a better, more talented defense next year.
Just a staggering amount of cap room. I mean, when they adjusted it yesterday and they had almost $83 million dollars that they had to work with, which I figured, and I use SpotTrack as mine.
At this point, they're just...
Well, yeah, although there is real cash involved here, and when you got to tell your owner, you know, that $17 million that we paid, that didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe, but it is real cash, and we don't want people to think it's just monopoly money out there. But there's so much money that they have, and I think I calculated they had almost $18 million more than the Raiders, who were the next closest team. Right. So they've got the leverage to go do what they want to do. Right. Do they get that done? Well, I mean, there's other people with other projects and things they're working on too, but they've got what they need to get it done.
And this was the idea from the start, that they were going to make a huge push. And at the end of the day, when all this is over with, I have no doubt that there will be legitimate stories to be written of, they overpaid X, Y, Z. These guys won't be able to live up to the contracts. And a lot of these guys are signing. There's no way, if the numbers are true, that these guys will be able to, quote, live up to the contracts. No. It's impossible.
Yeah, you're right.
But that wasn't the idea. The idea was, in Jacksonville, with the way this team has been in the past, you were going to have a situation where you could overpay, where you could draw and reshape the image and the core of the franchise. And that's what they're trying to do. And if what is being reported is true, they're going to accomplish that. I don't know that these guys, if you think this group is going to live up to this $80 million of cap space they spend, they're not going to spend that much, but you get my point. No, they're not. But can they take the Jaguars defense from here to here? It looks like it can.
Remember, in 2001, the Panthers were the worst defense in football. They were 31st that year because there were only 31 teams. And then they went out and brought in John Fox, who obviously enacted a change. And with the number one pick, they brought in Julius Peppers, and their defense went from number 31, one impactful player that changed the pass rush, to number two. In 1 year's time. They had some players in place, but they needed that pass rush. So if you go find the right guy, and I don't even think Julius Peppers had 10 sacks that year, but that one guy who can take the attention of the offensive coordinator, you could, and I'm not saying 32 to any of that, but just a big.
Oh, I think that's what you're saying.
Well, maybe I am. Why not? I'll stand on it. But you could take a big bite out of the disparity mm-hmm. between where you are and where the best teams are, and that's what you want to get done.
And remember, all they need to do defensively, they were 24th, probably in reality in terms of defense, 30 or 31st. They weren't very good.
But last in the league on third down.
With this offense ascending, you don't need this defense to go from 30 to 2. You don't need it to be the 85 Bears to get back to competitive. You need the defense to get to here so that it can play and get the offense some opportunities and not feel like you're automatically going to give up big chunks. So they need to get better. They need to be able to get off the field on when? Third down.
That's key down, of course. Let's take a look at a few of the names that are rumored from reports and such to be associated with the Jaguars. You mentioned Malik Jackson. That report came out just earlier today. Four seasons, of course, scored in the Super Bowl, the defensive tackle. He's more of an inside three technique type of guy. He can move a little bit.
Well, but he's got enough explosiveness that they could put him on the edge here and there. I don't know that he's a Leo, but he's a 293-pounder who's got some explosiveness to it.
They can put him there. They can put him outside.
They can trick it up.
The biggest thing is you can't play in this league with just four starters.
Yeah.
It's not the way it works. So if Malik Jackson comes in and shares time with Cindric Marks and they move Roy Miller around and they move Jared Oddick around, that's what the really good defenses do. They come at you in waves. If you remember last year, this defense got to the point where it was doing okay against the Jets in that midseason run. Cindric Marks was on the field. When he wasn't on the field, ugh. So Malik Jackson or more depth gives you to the point where when a guy goes down, you're not walking around the rubber hallways out here going, oh, what's going to happen now? You know, it gives you a chance to go compete. You can't get by with just 11 good players on one side of the ball.
A guy who might know that more than anybody is Bruce Irvin. They came in waves out in Seattle the last few years. Irvin in four seasons, outside linebacker officially, but is a rush end type of guy. And a guy that can make an impact right away.
Not a guy that they're familiar with, obviously, yeah. with the time that the head coach and the defensive coordinator spent out there. And I read that the Cardinals were in on him, and it brings me to one of the selling points the Jaguars
have. Yeah, but then the Jaguars will just start doing this.
Well, they can do that, and the Cardinals can't. But if money was equal, the one thing that the Jaguars have is a young, ascending quarterback that mm-hmm. they can sell. And the quarterback in Arizona played well until that last playoff game this year. But, you know, Carson Palmer's an older guy who's had a history of injuries. You don't know how long that train's going to go. If I'm selling this franchise, number one is obviously the money. That's what they're after. But the ability to sell the quarterback, mm-hmm. whether it's Julius Thomas on the offensive side or a guy like Bruce Irvin on the defensive side or Malik Jackson, selling that quarterback is huge. Getting that guy in place in year two means that right now the plan of taking the cap room and using it wisely and using it came to fruition.
Well, and there has to be a comfort level. If you talk to guys around this franchise, and we all know, we've talked about it, there's a huge comfort level with players who have played for Gus to play for him again. There's also an element of that with Todd Walsh.
Yeah.
So is that a huge advantage with Irvin over Atlanta? No, because Dan Quinn's there, and I'm sure there's the same sort of relationship. But without question, if you're Bruce Irvin and you're going to a place where you're unfamiliar and you're going to be unfamiliar in free agency, that's a factor that always plays into a tough transition for these first-year guys. But if you're Irvin and you're sitting there going, I can play for Walsh, I can play for Gus, I'm getting paid a lot of money, that just makes sense if you truly believe there's something else to go along with that. And as you say, that something else is the fact that they have a quarterback and an offense that you can at least legitimately sell as ascending and a core. So that I think that gives them a good shot with him.
A lot of talk in the back end of this defense, too, especially at the free safety spot. And the beard of Eric Weddle has been talked about around the Jaguars. How realistic is it?
We've got to leave the beard down because he shaved it.
Right. He's gone now. Gone. But how much does he have left in the tank might be a question, right?
It's hard to say. I mean, he says 3 to 5 years. At 31 years old, that
is. Shattuck said he's got stuff left in the tank, too.
Plenty of years.
You know,
If he's the one I don't think's happening.
Yeah, I don't either.
Feel like one
and to me, the guy that I really want here, if I am Gus Bradley, is Jalen Ramsey. I've had guys that I know tell me, though they think he's the best player in the draft. I mean, that he's a guy that almost certainly, as we get closer to draft, will climb above five. And so that means you got to go find a veteran safety.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, Weddle's a guy who was in the heart of that San Diego defense. He's 31 years old. I think I'd take a shot at a younger guy than that.
I think they'll wind up being forced to do that. But I also think from Dave Caldwell's perspective, and even from this defense, yes, it's on record that free safety has been a deficient area, and it's vitally important. At the same time, if you're Dave Caldwell and if you're this defense, Fowler, Marks, Irvin, Jackson, if all these things work out, which I'm not saying it's going to, if you can pressure the quarterback.
Oh, you saw it in the Super Bowl.
It all of a sudden makes that deficiency at free safety or whatever it is maybe not show up quite as often. So that would be the other thing of if we're getting to the quarterback a lot, then we're going to get better even if we don't get the ideal guy. I think it's going to be tough to get Jalen Ramsey. That's why they need a veteran. You can't count on him sliding to five.
You know, as I think back, when the Giants had Michael Strahan, they drafted Mathias Kiwanuka and Justin Tuck and O.C. Umenyora.
Came at you in waves.
I mean, they just kept coming, and that was why they were able to beat.
And who cared where they lined up?
No, it didn't matter.
Right.
You're right. And they were able to beat Tom Brady in two Super Bowls because of the pass rush. Well, again, the pass rush in Denver in the AFC Championship game, Brady just never had time to even set his feet because you had the guys coming from the outside and then Malik Jackson up the middle.
And it's becoming more and more that way.
You got to have it.
The more the rules in the back prevent you from having your hands on guys, it's hard to cover a guy more than 4 or 5 seconds. It's hard to cover a guy at all. But if you're good up front, it's the old thing. Everybody who follows football knows this. If you're good up front and can disrupt, then that affects everything else on the field. And you would think, again, I don't know where the high number of sacks is going to come from. Maybe it's all these guys getting seven. But if you have these guys, if you have this combination we're all talking about, it's hard to imagine Brian Hoyer standing for 7 seconds at Everbank Field next October.
You know, one quick thought.
Mm-hmm.
There were times last year where the Jaguars put Jared Odrick in that three technique, and he was effective.
Yeah, put him in too.
And he was effective getting up the field,
yes,
and disrupting from the middle, right? You don't want that every play. That's not his great strength. But now if you've got pressure on the outside, if you've got Malik Jackson and Dante Fowler and Bruce Irvin, and then you take Odrick and he can get one-on-one matchups, mm-hmm, somewhere among a weaker guard or a guard-center combo that he thinks that he can exploit, I mean, those guys will make the guys that you spent money on last year better, more effective for Todd Walsh.
Stay tuned throughout the week here on Jaguars.com. Free agency coverage, the negotiation period. We're knee-deep in legal tampering these days.
Yeah, let's get to 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Wednesday at 4 o'clock, the league year begins. Stay here on Jaguars.com for the latest. We go to the phone lines now and welcome in our first guest today from ESPN and the Monday Morning Quarterback, NFL business analyst Andrew Brandt. Good to have you, Andrew. How are you?
I'm well. Good to be with you guys.
This is a fun time of year, right? You like the free agency stuff, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My career has been an agent for many years, a team rep with the Packers for many years, and now analyzing it on the media side. And in all three disciplines, really, this is the most interesting time of year, whether you're an agent, a team executive, or this. It's really where the action gets done. The slowest time of year for these jobs is during the season. It really ramps up off season.
Andrew, we talk with Dave Caldwell, the GM here, a lot, and he's not a fan, of course, of free agency. He's trying to build through the draft, and you supplement with free agency where you can. From a VP's perspective, a guy who used the salary cap and was the cap guy in Green Bay, similar view? I mean, you use it when necessary, right?
Yeah, and I think people know enough about the Green Bay Packers that there's pretty much of an avoidance there. It's always homegrown, build your own, draft and develop. Identify your core players as you go forward and lock them up as opposed to locking up some other teams' free agents. I think there's a lot of that reluctance around the league now. Having said that, in the next 48 hours, we will see some crazy contracts. I always told our people in Green Bay, all right, let's just keep our hands in our pockets during the stupid money phase, and let's get out there in 3, 4, 5 days and see what's there in terms of more available, more bargain-related buys. We'll see if that happens. You know, I think everyone talks about a plan of being restrained. But sometimes they get into that competition, and the emotion drives them to do things they wouldn't plan to do.
How hard is that, Andrew? I was with Indianapolis for about 10 years, and Bill Polian and the staff, there were times, literally the first couple of days of free agency, where they just weren't in the building because they just didn't want to participate. You know, and I'm exaggerating, but it's pretty close to that. And I guess you can relate to that because of that temptation you talked about. But there are situations where teams have to do something to supplement to sort of get through a period where their roster is deficient at certain spots, right? I mean, it's hard to start out with a keep your salary cap pure with draft picks approach, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And unfortunately, and I know this upsets people about their free agent signings, but a lot of them are really in response to making mistakes in the draft. And I admit, our big free agent signing while I was in Green Bay turned out to be the defensive player of the year a couple years later was Charles Woodson. And really, we went after Charles because of that. We had made a number one and a number two pick over the past couple years on cornerbacks. Neither of them had panned out. They both were soon out of the league. And we paid for that mistake in terms of money with a Charles Woodson, who turned out to be great, of course. But a lot of times that's the case, where free agency is covering up for mistakes made in the draft, because in theory, and it's all theory, you should be able to build your team that way and not have to overspend to get these positions right.
Well, you know, the reason, and I tell people this, that the Jaguars have $82 million in cap room is because they don't have any of their first-round picks from 2005. I mean, talk about 11, 12, you know, those guys weren't there, so they couldn't pay them. And it leaves the Jaguars, Andrew, in a unique position of having all this leverage. So as somebody who has structured contracts, would you rather spread it out over 3 or 4 years, or would you rather get it all into the first 2 years if you're the Jaguars and have the leverage so that in case you make a mistake, you don't have to suffer with it down the road? How dangerous is that approach, if at all?
I like it. I mean, listen, that's what teams should, I think, strive for, is a cap situation like the Jaguars, like Cleveland now, like the Raiders, where they can just load cap into the present year. So here's my theory about what's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be crazy spending beyond, I don't know, 6 to 10 golden ticket winners. But I do think teams like the Jaguars, Raiders, etc., will structure contracts in a way that makes it look like they're spending a lot of money, but they're really containing cap. For instance, I think people around there know this. If you get someone, you agree with the agent, you have a $20 million first year number, most teams would put $15 million or so of that into a signing bonus, prorate it out, push out cap charges, have a low number the first year. Well, now a team like the Jaguars can say, all right, $20 million first year, look, we'll contain it all, whether through salary, through roster bonus, anything but prorated signing bonus. So we contain the cap. So if things go south with that player, there's no residual cap effect. That's the goal, I think, of cap flexibility, where you're paying as you go, you're keeping cash and cap as close to the same as possible, and you have a clean cap going forward. That's what the flexibility allows them now. I think they're in great position.
You've been on both sides, obviously. Is there a negative for the player in what you just described? Not really, right? Because he's getting his money up front.
No, I mean, you're getting the same money. I suppose they could argue, well, if you don't have proration, it makes it easier to cut him.
But you got your cap.
I just never have bought into that. You know, I've been around so many situations. You cut a player, you don't ask, what's the cap situation? This is going on in Philadelphia right now where they're trading him. I mean, yeah, I mean, the agent can argue we want some proration in there, but really, I always told agents, you let me worry about the cap. I'll get you the cash.
How chaotic are the first couple hours, Andrew? I mean, I know you stayed away from it some in Green Bay, but I'm sure you were involved in some chaotic time. I mean, describe to listeners, if you can, is it phones going off the hook all the time, or just put us there if you can in the room?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, I think what you do is you have a sense now, especially with this legal tampering, where players are going. Not so much where they're going, but where their money is. And the way it gets frenetic is if you're in on somebody and the money's going higher. And then you sort of say, wow, you know, should we step up and should we go higher? Have we gone past the number here? Do we have to pull back in other areas to do this? And it's almost like on a much different financial level right after the draft, when these undrafted free agents are deciding between two or three teams in a matter of a minute. I think there's a little more reasoned application in free agency because there is no deadline, really, and teams are going to be very, very fast-paced. For instance, in my day, it was always about the visit, right? So you'd set up visits and then another visit, then another visit. I think visits are passe right now. I think teams are signing players without visits.
Yeah, who has time for that?
Everyone knows visits are just recruiting and they say what you want to hear.
You know, Andrew, in 2001, the Jaguars were in the worst cap situation in the league, and for a decade, they tried to dig themselves out of that. They obviously didn't get that far. With the way that the cap is going up, $12 million this year, and it doesn't appear like we're going to see that number slide backwards anytime in the near future, with the popularity of the game and the rights fees and the opportunity to make money with online streaming and all of the opportunity, is it getting more difficult to screw the cap up? I mean, look at how many teams have more than $20 million in cap room this year. It's astronomical.
Yeah. I think that's a good statement. And, again, I frankly, I study this thing, and I don't see where all the money's going. I really don't. And I know there are minimums and all that. And, by the way, the minimum's based on the actual cap, not the adjusted cap, so it's not the Jaguars won $90 million. It's based on the 155, and I know there's going to be some reckoning of team spending at the end of this year, but I just don't see where it's going. I think rookies get squeezed on the way in, veterans get squeezed on the way out. You look at the waiver wire the past 3 weeks, these are the sweet spot players in the next few days, but as I say, there's only what, 10 to 12 of them that you walk away saying, wow, that's a pretty striking contract. So, frankly, I don't know where all the money's going. I just don't see teams spending like I thought they would when all the rookie money was transferred out of the rookies.
Andrew Brandt from ESPN and the Monday Morning Quarterback. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's a great follow. At Andrew Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, the spelling of the last name. We appreciate your time on a busy week, Andrew. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Andrew Brandt with us from ESPN.
Fascinating stuff.
Sports Illustrated. Tickets on sale now. Houston and Tennessee, the division games here at home this year. And, of course, the world champions, the Packers and the Vikings among the out-of-division games. Call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com/tickets. J.P. Shadrick, John Osher, Brian Sexton.
He said something interesting. He's not sure if he can figure out where the money's going to get spent. So log on to Jaguars.com Thursday afternoon. Somebody has a better idea.
A lot of this going on, huh?
No, and he's right. Overall, if he's looking at the big picture of the league, and I think he's right overall. It's not going to be as gross as I like to say everywhere else, but here there's going to be money spent on that.
There are some teams that have gotten themselves into a pinch, and I wanted to hit with this before he left, but like Detroit last year, they had three players that were making more than $20 million, were $100 million contracts. So they lost maybe their best player in Ndamukong Suh because they had spent so much on those three guys
right,
that they couldn't afford to keep them all. You got a situation down in Miami this year where they have $200 million guys now with Ryan Tannehill and Ndamukong Suh, and they're probably going to lose the best young pass rusher that's going to go into free agency in Olivier Vernon. They've spent so much. So you can get into some trouble with the mega contracts, but the vast majority of the league is in really good shape.
Brian, thanks a lot. John, thanks a lot. We'll reach out to Julius next week. Our thanks to Andrew Brandt from ESPN and Sports Illustrated, the Monday Morning Quarterback, for joining us. Hey, stick around Jaguars.com this week. Yes, it's about to get fun. The money's going to start flying in a few days.
Can I jump in there and catch just a few?
It would be nice, wouldn't it? So stay tuned right here on Jaguars.com. That'll do it for today on Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank.